This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us, only sky.
Happy last week of February to all our free-thinking friends and listeners, and welcome to Free Thought Radio. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. Free Thought Radio features slightly irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
I'm Dan Barker, here with Annie Laurie Gaylor, and this radio show, Free Thought Radio, is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, not freedom of or for. Of course, we're in favor of that, but our group is a group of atheists and agnostics and sundry non-believers of different names. We work to keep religion and government separate and to educate the public about the views of the non-believers. The fastest growing segment of the religious identification of America is non-religion. So this is radio for us.
And freedom from religion, because there is no freedom, religious liberty, if there is not the freedom to dissent.
Exactly. So, you know, if you can't say no, then you can't say yes. So our members don't believe in an afterlife or a pre-life, or we just believe in this life right now. Woody Allen is an atheist, and Woody Allen once said, I'm not afraid of death. I just don't want to be there when it happens. He also said once, I don't believe in life after death, but just in case, I'm taking a change of underwear. And that reminds me of the guy who said, when I die, I hope I can die like my grandfather did. He died peacefully in his sleep. I would like to die like my grandfather died, not screaming and yelling like the passengers that were in the car he was driving.
So we have lots to talk about on our show today, and later in the hour we'll talk with a researcher at Human Rights Watch about their campaign to stop the execution of a woman convicted of performing witchcraft and supernatural acts. Yes, the Saudi government is preparing to put to death an illiterate woman for an unprovable crime which she confessed to under duress. And we'll hear more about this travesty of justice and what is being done to save this woman later in our show.
And for a little welcome levity this dark, cold time of the year, we'll also play a clip of a recent TV interview of the wonderful comedian Julia Sweeney. She was on a show with Craig Ferguson. We've had Julia on our show before. She's the Saturday Night Live alum. She played androgynous Pat. She's let go of God, and she has a monologue called Letting Go of God. It's available on CD, and we sell it at ffrf.org. And later this year, it's coming out as a much-anticipated movie.
And in honor of what seems like the world's longest winter, at least to those of us here in Madison, Wisconsin, where we're broadcasting from, we're going to be playing, probably for the first time on radio, a song called Spring Will Come, words by our favorite atheist composer, Yip Harburg.
Yip Harburg, who wrote all those great songs, Somewhere Over the Rainbow, the number one movie song, and It's Only a Paper Moon, and Finian's Rainbow, and all of that. And also later we'll talk about the free-thinking views of W.E.B. Du Bois, the founder of the NAACP, who was born this day in 1868. But first, it's time for Free Thought Radio's Theocracy Alert.
Some international news of concern. We'll be talking, of course, about that Saudi Arabian attempt to put to death a woman as a witch. But we want to talk about the young journalist now in Afghanistan.
Being sentenced to death for so-called blasphemy. 23-year-old Syed Pervez Kambakhsh in Afghanistan was sentenced to death for blaspheming the name of Muhammad this year. Sentenced to death by an Afghan court. He's accused of downloading an article from the internet which claims Muslim fundamentalists have misrepresented the views of the Prophet Muhammad in order to oppress women. This young student and reporter was arrested and tried by religious judges allegedly without legal representation.
And this should be of special concern to those of us in America and to our conscience, since we went to war and we are still at war in Afghanistan, and partly to depose the Taliban. And the United States played a role in the adoption of the Afghan Constitution. So you can join the United Nations human rights groups, journalists, and Western diplomats in seeking to free this young man, this student, this feminist who cares about the oppression of women in his country. There's an e-petition put out by The Independent, which is the British Daily, which you can sign. To check out how to do that, go to ffrf.org/action.
And closer to home, of course, the Taliban is all over the world in one guise or another. Some towns still consider themselves very religious. Annie Laurie, you recently had an unusual state church complaint that you handled in a town in Michigan. What's the name of the town?
Hudsonville, Michigan.
Hudsonville. First, let's listen to a local TV news segment about your complaint.
The Hudsonville mayor is seeking legal advice tonight after receiving a letter from the Freedom From Religion Foundation. That letter states that Hudsonville is violating the separation of church and state by including the words striving to serve God in its mission statement. Annie Laurie Gaylord, the group's president, told WZZM 13 News they sent the letter after receiving a complaint from a Hudsonville resident. Gaylor calls the wording shocking.
We have a godless constitution, and we have a secular government, and we have public officials who've taken an oath of office to uphold that secular constitution, using their office to promote their own personal beliefs. And that is a violation of the rights of conscience of citizens in Hudsonville.
Hudsonville's mission statement was adopted in 1995. The mayor says he would prefer not to comment until he hears from the city attorney.
So if the majority of that town are religious, what's wrong with the city acknowledging that?
Well, believe me, I've had that question asked by about six reporters, Grand Rapids area reporters in Michigan. And it does kind of make me sigh. You know, I have to say, well, hasn't Michigan heard of the Bill of Rights, where you protect the rights of the minority from the tyranny of the majority? You can't take a vote on what church your neighbors have to attend or that they have to support a place of worship. And, you know, gee, it's just kind of a little concerning that in 2008 we're still being asked this question all the time. And it simply is not the business of a city to strive to serve God. It's right up there as their mission statement at their website. And the city of Hudson should strive to serve its citizens.
Exactly. But some of the people are asking you, what harm is it to the handful of non-believers if they put this little statement on their website? I mean, what's the harm, actually?
Well, the harm is that their freedom of conscience is violated, that they're being turned into outsiders. They don't believe in a God, and they don't believe that their city should have anything to do with a God. They believe in separation of church and state. So it harms our Constitution as well as individual rights.
And it's also true, even though it may be true that most of them are Christian, it's like Reformed Church, isn't it?
They're Dutch Reform, and every single reporter who's called me about this has said in sort of hushed tones, it's a very religious area. Like they're scared someone's going to overhear it. And it's dominated by this very, very conservative Dutch Reformed Church. But, you know, that's fine. Religion can flourish in that community, but the government should not be promoting
it. Well, it's also true, I'm sure, in that little town, that the overwhelming majority of citizens are white. So what if the webpage of the city said, we are here to serve the white community?
Exactly. I would think they would get it then.
Well, this is Free Thought Radio. I'm Dan Barker here with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll be right back to listen to part of a really fun interview with comedian Julia Sweeney about her monologue, Letting Go of God. And then after that, we'll talk with Human Rights Watch about the fate of the Saudi woman who's been sentenced to death as a witch.
Find out more about Free Thought Radio and the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio. Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
And we're back with Free Thought Radio. I'm Dan Barker here with Annie Laurie Gaylor. And coming up, we'll be talking about the fact that women are still being prosecuted and persecuted for the made-up crime of witchcraft, in this case in Saudi Arabia, and what's being done to save the life, we hope, of one Saudi woman who's been sentenced to death as a witch.
And now let's listen to an interview of comedian Julia Sweeney from Saturday Night Live fame by TV personality Craig Ferguson, and she's talking about her one-woman play, Letting Go of God.
My next guest, you probably know her as Pat from Saturday Night Live. She's got a new CD out, Letting Go of God. It's available now. Please welcome the lovely Julia Sweeney, everybody. Welcome, Julia. How the heck are you?
I'm doing well.
Are you doing well now?
Yes, I am. Yeah.
Tell me about this, the Letting Go of God. Is this some kind of...
It's my CD of my last... I've been doing monologues. This is my third monologue.
Monologue? How long is your monologue?
It's over 2 hours long.
My.
I know.
Yeah, mine feels like that some nights as well. Yeah. But this is actually 2 hours long.
Yeah, it's the CDs and then there's a book of the text.
Right.
But I did it here in New York and it was sort of a hit and now I'm selling it off my website.
Well, that's nice. And what is it about, Letting Go of God? Is it some kind of anti-religious doctrine?
No, well... A little.
Really? We'll be right back, everybody.
It's actually, it's funny because the people who came, it's pretty respectful towards religion.
Right.
Although I find there's not very much evidence for a deity when
a deity,
I look into it.
A deity.
Yes.
You're an atheist then?
Yes.
You are. I find that interesting. Is that, that's a very convinced stance. You're absolutely convinced there is no God.
No. But I feel there's no... I'm saying I'm an atheist like I'm an atheist. I don't live my life under the assumption there is a God.
Ah, right.
But I don't, you know, obviously you can't prove one way or the other, but I feel like the evidence that there is a God is very weak.
Yes.
Anyway, but the story of my... But my CD is more about my journey. Like, I rejoin the Catholic Church, and I take a Bible study class, and I try...
Are you... So like you're still a Catholic, then?
Well, I'm culturally Catholic, I would say.
Right, right.
Actually, I felt... I've met a lot of people who are Catholic, like friends of mine growing up, who feel the same way I do, but they're culturally Catholic. They participate in the rituals, but... They don't believe in God.
Wow.
Yes.
The priest finds out about that, you're in big trouble. You know that, right?
Well, you know, it's like people say, they'll say, well, you know, they're agnostic or they don't really believe or they question it, but people don't go as far as I do normally.
And say, but...
In fact, once I said I was an atheist, it was such a big deal. Like, for years I would say, well, I'm a non-believer. I don't really think there's good evidence. People are like, oh, yeah, yeah. But then once you say you're an atheist, then it's all...
Well, you see, it's interesting. I think that the whole idea, I always do, and I'm by no means challenging you on this. I think everyone's entitled to their own opinion, but I always thought that the whole idea was there was no evidence so that you could have faith. Because if there was evidence, you wouldn't need faith. Hey, presto, the whole thing wouldn't make any sense. So you have to have no evidence so that you can have faith, isn't
it? I know, but when I was raised with that. I was sort of raised to believe that having faith was a good quality.
Right.
But once I got older, I mean, like Carl Sagan always talks about the purple dinosaur in the garage. Like, if it's invisible and there's nobody seen it, how can you... You know, you can't assume there's no invisible purple dinosaur in the garage, but there's pretty good evidence that there is not an invisible purple dinosaur in the garage.
But,
you see what I mean?
Yes, but some of us have been on journeys in life where there very clearly was a purple dinosaur in the garage. And not only in the garage, but following me around and going from club to club.
That's Julia Sweeney on Craig Ferguson's talk show, and we have her CD, the Freedom from Religion Foundation. I think we were the first to have it and to sell it. You can order that CD of hers called Letting Go of God from our website, ffrf.org/shop.
And they actually got into some kind of interesting theological issues there, you know, such as what does an atheist mean, Dan?
Yeah, well, she pointed out on the show that atheist means just the lack of theism. It's an absence of theism. Some atheists, a subset of atheists, do claim to believe there's no God, but most of us atheists simply live our lives as if there were no Santa, no purple dragon, and no God.
When I first met Julia Sweeney, I think it was about 6 years ago, it was at a dinner in L.A., and she came up to me all thrilled and said, I didn't know you were married to Dan Barker. I love his book, Losing Faith in Faith, but I'm so mad about it because that's the title I would have used it when I'm writing my new book, Letting Go of God. And so she did actually come up with a very good title.
Well, I would have sold it to her for a nickel. But I'm Dan Barker. I'm here with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We're in Free Thought Radio. We'll be right back to talk with Christoph Wilk, who works with Human Rights Watch, about something that does not compute in the year 2008. The Saudi Arabian government wants to put to death a woman for the made-up crime of witchcraft. And we'll end our show with an ode to spring by atheist and master lyricist Yip Harburg, the man who put the rainbow in The Wizard of Oz. So stay tuned for part two of Free Thought Radio, coming right up.
First I was a Catholic girl, loved the mass, I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed, I really felt that I was blessed. Plus I loved my uniform, so did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age, and all those things I thought were true, someday I'd break the big taboo of letting go of God. Letting go of God.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. Or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio on Air America. Protect the First Amendment. It protects you.
And I'm Dan Barker here with Annie Laurie Gaylor. Welcome back to the second half of Free Thought Radio.
We have on the phone with us from New York City a researcher with Human Rights Watch, Christoph Wilke, to talk about this case involving a woman in Saudi Arabia, an illiterate woman named Faja Falil, who has been sentenced to die after being convicted of witchcraft and performing supernatural acts. Welcome to Free Thought Radio, Mr. Wilke.
Hello, welcome.
Tell us about this case.
This case is a case that is well documented, but by no means an isolated case of a woman who was accused by some of her neighbors and was arrested by the religious police in Saudi Arabia, who then proceeded to find strange things in her house, proceeded to find witnesses who came out of the woodwork to testify that she was indeed a witch and that she had put spells on them, including a spell of rendering a man impotent after she had bewitched him to fall in love with her, and another man whose ex-wife, divorced wife, came back to him precisely in the on the date that she had predicted. These are all things that, of course, may have a natural explanation, but her fate was sealed almost from the moment she was arrested. She never had a chance to prove that there is no such thing as witchcraft, that these charges are absurd, and that the evidence against her is contrived.
Now, who came forward? Who accused her first of witchcraft? Do you know the details?
I believe it it was based on a private complaint against one of her fellow citizens in that very small town on the border with Jordan. After the religious police arrested that woman, that woman allegedly confessed that she's not the only witch, but that Fawza Faleh is also a witch, and then they came to arrest her. We didn't include a mention of details of the two other women because their sentences have since been reduced.
It's like the Salem witch trials in this country. You know, one accused accuses the other. Now I understand there was duress.
Well, that's precisely one of our big concerns about this case. It's not a question of whether you believe in witchcraft or not, but it's a question of dragging supernatural events and beliefs into the courtroom and really squeezing or under duress coercing a woman to confess to being a witch. The beatings that she was allegedly subjected to were so severe that on one occasion she fainted and had to be hospitalized. Mm-hmm. A relative of hers who I spoke to had seen her back and told me it was black and blue from bruises. This was 20 days or so after she had been arrested. So there's really very little that we find credible in her confession to being a witch. And the other evidence, such as vials with foul-smelling substances, or a neighbor who she pretended not to know, who said that he saw a strange garment hanging on a tree, those are not things that you would find go beyond beyond a reasonable doubt about her guilt.
Now, the stories that I've seen on this, I guess they were Reuters or Agence French Press stories, said that she's illiterate and that she had signed with her fingerprint a confession. Is that what you understand to be true, that she didn't know what she was signing?
Well, both things are true. I mean, it's very common in Saudi Arabia in criminal trials to, rather than sign with a signature, to put your fingerprint on a document, and that is then taken as authenticated, sort of notarized, we would say, and stands up in court against all scrutiny.
A document that you can't even read.
Well, in this case, she was illiterate, or she is illiterate, and so she couldn't read it, and from what we know, it wasn't read to her.
Oh, dear. So, do we know how old she is?
Well, I don't have her birth date. I could find that out, but I know that on May 4th, 2005, she was 50 years old, which would make her between 52 and 54 right now.
So she's a middle-aged woman, which I think was a very common age for women to be accused of being witches, you know, in Europe during the witch hunts.
Well, because of property. They wanted the property.
Did her family stay with her, or have they made accusations?
Well, it's split down the middle. There are two witnesses against her from her family who she says were beaten into making their confessions. There's another part of her family who strongly supports her try to seek help through attorneys, but the attorneys were not allowed to present their case in court. No. They were banned from the courtroom. By and large, her family stands with her.
I want to ask, is witchcraft a state offense over there?
It's a bit difficult to say. Saudi Arabia does not have a penal code that tells you exactly what crimes are on the books. Saudi Arabia does not have a system of precedent whereby prior court rulings would determine not only sort of the fine print of interpretation of law, but also what the broad outlines of a crime are. So we all know that murder is a crime. We all know that theft is a crime. But there are many red lines that are not defined in written Saudi law, and where every judge has the discretion to set law for himself.
But in religious law, that might be considered a crime, but does that leak over then into civil law?
There is only religious law in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, well, and the Muslim countries would accept much of what we call the Old Testament, thou shalt not suffer a witch to live, is in Leviticus, is it?
Yeah,
or
in
Exodus?
The Old Testament.
Exodus. So we're seeing women today being tried under the same biblical law that probably tens of thousands of women were tried under in the Dark Ages, the Renaissance. So that's quite a terrible thing.
Well, I mean, the Saudi legal system has some way to go before meeting the criteria of fulfilling the criteria of being a country of the rule of law. And most of all, it is the absence of written law. Every single piece of law in Saudi Arabia is based on religious interpretation of what that law should be. There is a fairly large body of statutory laws, but those are for things like traffic rules. You will not find a book of law that tells you what is a crime and what is not a crime. So therefore, every judge, as I said, can make it up as he goes along. And in this witchcraft trial, there is actually a wide range of opinion among Muslim jurists about whether witchcraft is a crime or not.
No.
Whether witchcraft is a crime against God, for which punishments would be preset, unalterable, and for which you would have a higher standard of evidence. That was the opinion of the appeals court, but not the opinion of the lower court in this case.
And the lower court reinstated the death penalty.
Well, they did another little trick. They said, well, if the appeals court thinks she didn't meet the evidentiary standard for witchcraft as a crime against God, we'll just sentence her on a discretionary basis for the public interest.
Now, certainly we do know much about the status of women in Saudi Arabia. Mr. Wilkie, could you briefly, reprise that women can't drive, for example?
Well, let's start with the justice system. There, in this case, or in sort of the violations of her due process rights, not having a lawyer, having to incriminate herself, and so on, those are not things that are specific to women. I find that in many other trials, men have not benefited from due process rights. But you're right to say that there is broad discrimination against women in Saudi Arabia on such issues as the right to move about, in order to leave your country as a Saudi woman. You need a written permission for every single trip out of the country that you make.
By a male relative.
By a male relative, your husband, your father, your son sometimes, or a brother. In order to move about within the country, you can get sort of a year-long permission to go about whenever you want. But it affects other areas as well. In the justice system, women, as in this case, have a hard time appearing before a judge who will actually refuse to be in a room with a woman who's not his relative. So therefore, they can't defend themselves. They're trying to institute video links in some courtrooms, but it's by no means rolled out to all.
So
women,
what?
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. What negotiation is Human Rights Watch doing?
Well, on this case, we're very clear. She did not commit a crime. There were such glaring violations of her due process and fair trial rights that it is incumbent upon the king to issue a pardon for her. This should be easy enough, I think, because for one, we document the violation of Saudi law. And for the other, the sentence as it stands is a crime against God, for which the king would not have authority to issue a pardon.
And what kind of pressure are you bringing to bear?
We've sent the letter. We've not had a reply. We are now starting to talk to the Saudi Human Rights Commission, which is a 2-3-year-old ministerial type of commission that officially deals with human rights cases. We'll see that they take up the case and put pressure on the king to issue a pardon.
Well, we certainly are glad that you're there working for this woman. And how can people reach Human Rights Watch and find out more about the case?
Well, everything we do is public. So on our website, hrw.org, you can go to the Saudi Arabia page and look at this and many other cases that we've dealt with. We're hoping to be in Riyadh in about 2 weeks' time to discuss broader issues in the justice system, the rights of women, children in conflict with the law, and domestic migrant workers. Those are the four areas we are trying to seek change for right now.
We're talking with Christoph Wilkie of Human Rights Watch. Thank you, Christoph, for joining us today.
Thank you.
I'm Annie Laura Geller with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio. We'll be right back to talk about why the founder of the NAACP rejected religion. And end with an anthem to spring. This is Free Thought Radio's last show in February, Good Riddance February. We'll be playing a lovely anthem to spring and to peace written by the great lyricist and skeptic, Yip Harburg.
No gods, no masters, no popes, no pastors. Think for yourself. No more dictators. Resist those woman haters and decide for yourself.
No gods, no masters, no popes, no pastors. Think for yourself. No more dictators. Resist those woman haters and decide for yourself.
Find out more about Free Thought Radio and the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laura Gaylor with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio.
And before we play A Farewell to Winter, An Ode to Spring, Free Thinkers Almanac takes a quick look at the life of W.E.B. Du Bois.
February 23rd in 1868, W.E.B. Du Bois was born in Massachusetts, attended all-black Fisk College in Nashville, earned his master's and doctorate from Harvard. His book, The Souls of Black Folk, published in 1903, made his name, in which he urged black Americans to stand up for their educational and economic rights. Du Bois was a founder of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People and edited the NAACP's official journal, Crisis, from 1910 to 1934, Du Bois turned Crisis into the foremost black literary journal. The black nationalist expanded his interests to global concerns and is called the father of Pan-Africanism for organizing international black congresses. And in his autobiography, Dan, why don't you write what he said about religion? Read what he said about religion.
W.E.B. Du Bois wrote, "I became a freethinker, and when I came to teach at an Orthodox Methodist Negro school, I was soon regarded with suspicion, especially when I refused to lead the students in public prayer. When I became head of a department at Atlanta, the engagement was held up because, again, I balked at leading in prayer. I flatly refused again to join any church or sign any church creed. From my 30th year on, I have increasingly regarded the church as an institution which defended such evils as slavery, color caste, exploitation of labor, and war."
And that was NAACP co-founder W.E.B. Du Bois. And now let's talk about spring. We've lived through what seems like the longest February ever here in Madison, Wisconsin. And here's a very special poem from the book Rhymes for the Irreverent by the famous lyricist and freethinker Yip Harburg.
The poem is called One Sweet Morning. Out of the fallen leaves, the autumn world over, out of the shattered rose that will smile no more, out of the embers of blossoms and ashes and clover, spring will bloom one sweet morning. Out of the fallen lads, the summer world over, out of their flags plowed under a distant shore, out of the dreams in their bones buried under the clover, peace will come one sweet morning. One sweet morning the rose will rise to wake the heart and make it wise. This is the cry of life the winter world over. Sing me no sad amen, but a bright encore. For out of the flags and the bones buried under the clover, spring will bloom. Peace will come one sweet morning, one sweet
and this,
morning.
This Yip Harburg poem, One Sweet Morning, if you can hear the rhythm in it, it's been put to music by Earl Robinson. And we have a recording, a live recording from the cast of Over the Rainbow by the Yip Harburg Foundation.
Out of the falling leaves, the autumn world over. Out of the shattered rose that will smile no more. Out of the embers of blossoms and ashes over. Spring will bloom one sweet morning.
Obviously, this is more than just spring. It's also a peace anthem as well as a free thought comment.
Yes, sing me no sad amen, but a bright encore. And as Yip Harburg always said of himself, he was an optimist.
And you have to be in February 2008, living in the United States of America. You can find that poem in Rhymes for the Irreverent, published by the Freedom from Religion Foundation, ffrf.org. You can hear all of our past shows archived and podcasts at ffrf.org/radio. And you can call our talkback number to be on the show, 608-204-0422, 608-204-0422.
Ask for a complimentary issue of our newspaper Free Thought Today at ffrf.org, and we thank Human Rights Watch staffer Christoph Wilk for joining us on Free Thought Radio, and you for listening.